Dr. Sheldon Roth, psychiatrist, drops by to discuss President Trump's mental fitness, also his new book that is out on that same issue. Tucker Carlson finally released that video that he'd been teasing last week on Chris Cuomo. Not good for Cuomo. More of what we already knew about him, but not good for him still. And his colleague, Brian Stelter, was grilled while on C-SPAN. They took calls. It wasn't pretty. We'll get into that. Also, Nancy Pelosi, rules for thee, but not for me. Her and Cuomo both breaking COVID rules. We'll touch on that. It all starts now. So Wednesday, here we go. New episode, new day, lots to cover. Always say that, but it's always true. There's so much stuff we, again, had to cut out stuff today. We'll try and get to it tomorrow if the new cycle of headlines doesn't crush that idea. But as we approach election day in November, it's coming up fast. Facebook has this new, you probably saw it in your feed. If you didn't, I'm not good about looking at my feed and notifications on there. I don't know if you guys are, but I'm not great about it. But you could see people posting about it. And you got, whether you saw it or not, you got it. But they put out this new eerie policy, which if it wasn't from Facebook, it wouldn't necessarily be as concerning. But given Zuckerberg and the company's history, it certainly is. And given the season that we're in, this is it here. You can read it effective October 1st, 2020. Section 3.2 of our terms of service will be updated to include, quote, we also can remove or restrict access to your content, services, or information if we determine that doing so is reasonably necessary to avoid or mitigate adverse legal or regulatory impacts to Facebook. So lots of legal mumbo jumbo there. And certainly private company, they're entitled to do what they want to do, right? It's sad how them, Jack Dorsey, and the folks over at Twitter, and so many of the other social media platforms do not like conservatives, do not, you know, value Christian beliefs and principles, do not really value what this country was founded on as a whole. And at least to Twitter's credit, they're more open about it. Facebook continues to deny it all the time, despite investigations, videos from within, sources from within saying the other. But the statement that's made in that is not necessarily that threatening in and of itself, because again, they're a private company. They're just adjusting some policies and procedures. People do that all the time. Terms of service, yada, yada. Fine. But it's Facebook who censors conservatives all the time, comes up with multiple reasons to lean back on, fall back on as to why and how they can do it, justification for doing it. And again, it just comes at a really, the timing of it's not good. The timing of it's not good. If anything, push this until after the results and the election are over. We know that you censor us. We know that you don't like us. That's fine. But the optics are just so bad, I think, when you release stuff like that. And maybe we're looking into it too much, but I don't think most of you out there think that. And I don't think that either. I think that they have a very malicious approach. There's malintent with a lot of things they do. And I just don't like the timing of it. Someone who doesn't love the timing of this or the release of this is Chris Cuomo. Tucker Carlson teased last week that he had some damning audio of the CNN anchor secretly recorded that he was going to release. Well, he went ahead and did it. We get another insight, another look behind the curtain with Chris Cuomo. Here it is, roll one.
Play you just a portion of one. Before you listen to this, try to remember what Chris Cuomo sounds like when you watch him on television. You've seen him, admit it. Then compare that version, that memory, the official, morally inflated Chris Cuomo, to the guy you hear in this recording. Here you go.
You know, I'm always careful when I talk to media, you know?
Right.
Do you know how many phone calls I've gotten from people at ABC who say that reporters are calling and lying about things they heard about me to try to get stories about me when I was at ABC? Guys calling and saying, I heard he was the Charlie Rose of ABC, used to invite women to the hotel and open his bathroom. Do I look like the kind of guy who's got to do that?
Sure, why not? But you're saying, so,
lying, so I already now have a good source that says that he forced one woman to have sex. I just want to know if you've ever heard anything like that. There is no woman
Right.
There is none of that.
So here's the problem.
Women who do work there saying, oh, yeah, you know, some of these men, and naming me with other guys, you know, we bumped into each other once in the elevator, and he put his hand on my shoulder, and he made me really uncomfortable. I mean, what the f***?
It's a problem, and now you...
So I'm careful with the media always.
Right.
I've always told you, the media is not your friend.
No.
Whoa, well, there's a lot to unpack here, but the first thing you notice is that Chris Cuomo is agitated. He's mad, really mad. And you know what makes him maddest of all? The suggestion that he's got to act like some old guy, Charlie Rose, to get the ladies, sandbagging women in hotel rooms with an open bathrobe. Do I look like the kind of effing guy who's got to do that? He asks his pal Michael Cohen. Cohen's response, sure, why not? Open bathrobes seem normal to Michael Cohen. But Chris Cuomo disagrees. Chris Cuomo doesn't need cheesy tricks like that. Chris Cuomo is on television. Chris Cuomo could bench press your Subaru. Open bathrobes are for losers. Chris Cuomo is not a loser. But you know who is a loser? Big time? All those women who keep accusing Chris Cuomo of sexual harassment. They claim he bothered them in elevators. Now, if women made those claims against you, Chris Cuomo might very well denounce you on his TV show, call for your firing, call for your banishment from decent society. These are women making the charges, after all. You must believe women. Women's voices must be heard. Me too, and all that. But that is not what Chris Cuomo tells his friend Michael Cohen, not even close. You get the sense as you listen that neither one of these guys is a big feminist. When Chris and Michael get together, they can let their hair down and be themselves. So Chris spares Michael the Me Too lecture. He doesn't say anything about women's voices, nothing flattering anyway. Instead, he says, and we're quoting here, I mean, what the F? In other words, these girls, they're crazy. All of them want a piece of Chris Cuomo. Maybe some of them want to get bench pressed, if you know what I mean. So they're making up these crazy lies, you know, like women do. Hormones, probably. But Michael Cohen is not convinced by this explanation. Even Michael Cohen takes women
more. All right, so, yeah, Tucker does a great job as always. Love that guy. Hope that they can keep him and protect him over there at Fox as things change drastically at the network, if you haven't been noticing. But we kind of knew this, right? There's all these claims out there. But what this what I take from this is Cuomo is the douchebag we always thought he was. I mean, you take a bottle, you shake it, whatever's inside is going to come out. Like, that's what happens with him all the time. That's what happens with a lot of people over at CNN all the time. You know, and he can act like whatever he wants. And to his credit, I guess, the difference is with him is he doesn't even really pretend not to be arrogant, smug, entitled, all those things on his show, on the network, because he always comes off that way. But to me, classlessness, arrogance, all of that was just heard there. It shows who he is. Is there anything damning in there? No, not necessarily. Not yet. There's other recordings. But it should show you the character of who he is. And there should be some issue with that. I can't wait to hear his apology, which will no doubt be smug as well, if he even offers one. If he feels like the world deserves to hear from him on that. We're going to touch on his brother later in the show, by the way, too, for something. But Cuomo wasn't the only CNN person who got some flack and attention that he didn't want this week. Obviously, that happened. Tucker released it. But Brian Stelter, who's a disaster. He's a disaster in a different sense than Cuomo. But he went on C-SPAN, and we've seen this a lot. And we've seen a really interesting side point here on C-SPAN where they take a lot of phone calls. Lots of Democrats over the last several weeks calling in and saying, we're sick of what's going on. We're changing. We're voting conservative this time around. At least this time around. Maybe not forever, but they're not voting for Biden because they're fed up with how the Democrats have handled this. Anyways, fast forward to this week, Brian Stelter stops by and agrees to take some calls on the show. Folks, he got go and find more than what we're just going to show you because he got grilled. And he has to, of course, just sit there and take it the whole time, which is the best part of all of it. Here's a sample of it. Roll two.
You know, I don't know if there's any journalists left at CNN, but I know that, you know, if I were to estimate about 300 different, you know, distortions or misinformation that we get out of CNN, and you have to watch them in the airport, which is harsh, but if you added all that up to 46 months, it comes out to be 300,000 plus distortions of truth. You defamed a child. And then you had to settle out of court to pay this child for distorting information about this young individual. CNN is really the enemy of the truth.
I'm grateful for the call, and I know that you're not the only person that feels this way. There has been a process of radicalization that's happened in this country with media bashing that is absolutely unprecedented. You know, 20, 30 years ago, conservatives talked about media bias, and there were some really valid points to that critique. It is absolutely true that lots of journalists are based in New York and Washington. They're based in big cities. They have liberal leanings. And mainstream newsrooms are built to make sure that that bias doesn't seep into the news coverage. And yet, sometimes it does. I absolutely acknowledge that. I think it's different to talk about things as if they're enemies. No American is an enemy of another American. No news outlet is an enemy of America.
And yet they push that stuff every day, further dividing the country, and then flip it around, blame it on President Trump. There's another caller who slammed them for the Chyron that we talked about here on the show, and everyone's seen with the CNN reporter in Kenosha saying fiery but mostly peaceful protest there. And Stelter, you know, responded to that as well. They cut the one guy off after he said it, but they allowed Stelter to respond to it. But again, interesting stuff there. And CNN puts themselves in this situation. And to his credit, in one of the responses, I think it might have been the Chyron response, he does say that they've made several mistakes there. Now, I'm not giving him credit in thinking that he's changing or actually understands the typical average American who's out there. You know, they, like Democrats at CNN and MSNBC, speak to liberals in big cities. They speak to a very small portion, big in number, but small demographic of people in these Democrat-run cities. And as he said in that response, there they are. They're very liberal-leaning cities: D.C., New York, fill in the blank with the other big ones: San Francisco, L.A., you know, Chicago. But I just found it very amusing. Again, go find some other ones out there, because there's some other great ones where he just has to sit there and kind of smile as the person calls him out on stuff that's very true and very fair. You know, there's some people who just call an attack, and that's not helpful. But some of these people made really, really good points, and he had to sit there and take it. All right, moving on. Real quick on one of our sponsors, been telling you about Mammoth Nation. They are on a mission to get President Trump reelected. We want to help him do it. We talk about how important this election is every day because of stuff like CNN and MSNBC and what they're pushing, because of the fact that Biden isn't fit, because of the fact that they don't support law and order on the Democrat side. And we're seeing that chaos and anarchy in the streets. So you can go to mammothnation.com right now. You can join for $19 a year. It's better than a donation because you get discounts on all sorts of stuff: cable TV, hotel, shopping, wireless, you name it. There's tons of opportunities there, but you need to join now. And if you join now, the good news is there's prizes. You get entered automatically into a raffle. Winners will be announced on Election Day. First prize gets that Samsung TV you see up top. Second place gets that Keurig coffee maker, and then a Bose speaker for third place. So not only are you getting discounts on awesome stuff that you're going to buy anyways, but you're also getting entered in to potentially win that prize. So go to mammothnation.com right now and join. We need your help. We appreciate you doing so. All right, let's get to it. Let's cruise the headlines. So no meeting with the Blakes yesterday. Trump did visit Kenosha. He visited there. Lots of people. You know, the governor didn't want him. There's lots of people there supporting him. Of course, Black Lives Matter showed up as well to kind of counter-protest. But there was lots of people there. And the Blakes didn't want to meet him. Said that they'd already met with President Biden, which is hilarious, not going to happen. And some discussions apparently that they had where Trump still wanted to meet with them or discuss things with them. They said their lawyer had to be present, which Trump was like, no, we're not doing that. That's not appropriate, not happening. So long story short, that didn't happen. He did meet with lots of officials there and offered up financial assistance for the now war-torn city. This was a clip of that conversation, Roll 3.
So I'm committed to helping Kenosha rebuild. We all are. We will provide $1 million to the Kenosha law enforcement so that you have some extra money to go out and do what you have to do. You took a rough week, to put it mildly, and you've done it incredibly well. I'm also providing nearly $4 million to support the small businesses that I talked about today that got burned up, burned down. and we're going to be providing over $42 million to support public safety statewide, including direct support for law enforcement and funding for additional prosecutors to punish criminals and resources to provide services to victims of crime. And that was
so good stuff going in there for support. And I can tell you this, the law-abiding, patriotic, God-fearing American citizens that are there in Kenosha and across the country for that matter, but specifically yesterday in Kenosha, love seeing a president come in and offer that. And I get it. Any president on either side, Republican or Democrat, should do that. They should be doing that. But what we've seen from the Democrats throughout this, you know, near 100 days of violence across the country has been silence. And so it's encouraging. I know that officials there was lots of respect and grateful hearts for the fact that President Trump was there offering that support, that he just was there in the first place. Again, the President of the United States is more than just the man. It's the office. If that individual comes, you show respect. You're grateful. You're excited. Even if you don't agree with him. And in this case, he brought some support to you. But it was interesting. Most media cut away from this. But this was a moment later in the meeting that happened with some prayer, which, of course, is very offensive to CNN, MSNBC, and the like. And again, a lot of them cut away, but here's the clip, roll four.
Thank you.
Really nice, thank you. Pastors, would you like to say a prayer?
Yes, sir.
I'd love to have that, because you are so highly thought of in the area. So please, James, Sharon.
Sure, you should pray.
Please.
Father, we come to you in the name of our Lord Jesus Christ, and we thank you for this time that you divinely ordained. Father, we ask you to forgive us all where we've strayed from your ways and where we've not acknowledged your word. We ask that you would continue to cause this nation to be one nation under God, that you alone are the one who can make us indivisible. And by being indivisible, there will be liberty and justice for all. We simply pray that you would bring our nation back to you, that your word will be dominant, that you would cause us to walk in love, to live in love, restore empathy and compassion, kindness, concern for each other. Lord, I pray for our president, as your word says, that you would strengthen him and continue to give him the wisdom and the heart to lead during this time, as well as all of the leaders that are here. We give ourselves to you, and we ask you for your good hand to be upon us. In the name of Jesus, our Lord, we pray. Amen. Amen.
Thank you very much. Sharon, would you like to say something?
I would. I think I'm...
So good stuff, right? Name into that. Good to see. Again, not everyone saw it because people don't want those values shared out there because they don't align with their own. But love seeing that. And we do. Look, folks, regardless of where you are, you do need to be praying for the country right now. I mean, you need to be praying for President Trump, like him or not. I know Pelosi always claims that she does. Maybe she does. We're going to get to you later, Nancy. But you need to be. You need to be praying for leadership. You need to be praying that this doesn't go as bad. I know everyone's hot and heated and talking about this side or that side, and we're going to clash. And I even do it too, but God, we really don't want that. We really don't want that. Like, it would be nice for our kids and their kids and other kids to have what we had growing up. Not what we have right now, but try and work our way back there. I don't know if it's possible, but let's at least try for it, right? So Biden is set to visit tomorrow. He's going to go to Kenosha. Can't wait to see what he says. We'll have clips for that. You know, we'll do something Friday or what have you with his visit there. But moving on, and speaking of, you know, not going to these extremes, although it seems more and more like a possibility all the time with the violence you've seen in Kenosha, Seattle, Chicago, Portland, obviously, et cetera, all those places, it's created more division. It's created a lot more division. How people have responded has changed. You know, basically there's the cave to the mob crew, or there's the stand up for principles crew. Some people in between still trying to decide where they fit, but that's where it's been. And Black Lives Matter and Antifa have a solely stated goal of causing mayhem, destruction, and violence in the streets. That's what the organizations are about. That's just who they are. And they don't deny it. They try to pin it on Trump, but the reality is that's who they are. That's what they want to do. That's their goal. And it plays into the Democrats, because then the Democrats can, of course, turn around and say that there's lawlessness and there's violence because people are upset about Trump. No, this is what they want to do anyways. This is who they are. But this gentleman here, and I don't know his name, you've maybe even seen this, it's going around social media, a little rough around the edges, but it's a great message that he has for, as a black man, for Black Lives Matter, as we see more and more of this violent looting, rioting, the assaults on police and citizens across the country. This is his message to them. Rule 5.
I remember telling you people, when white people get fed up, they gonna fight back. And when they fight back, it won't be pretty. Y'all wanna call them racist and wanna call them every name under God's green earth. That kid in Kenosha is just the start. They gonna get fed up. And when they get fed up, they outnumber you. Do not forget that it was people like this that stood up to the British. And they had an army. And these were just villagers who were fed up. You can only push the American people around so much, BLM. I would not like to be you in a couple of months if you keep this crap up. Ooh, it's gonna be bad. You think a blown bicep with a bullet is bad? You think one person shot in the stomach is bad? You think losing your cap is bad? Wait until every last one of you gets put down. I'm just gonna sit on the sidelines with my popcorn and watch. I might join in, but I will definitely be watching. I might even put on Let the Bodies Hit the Floor, because this is going to be good. We tried to warn you. Do not push the American around. True patriots will stand up. And when they stand up, you go down. The British learned the hard way, and I guess y'all stubborn morons need to learn the same way. You step on the wrong porch with this, raise your fist for BLM. Oh, he gonna raise something. He will be raising something to you. Yes, sounds like pew pew. And you'll be getting more than a few few.
So, you know, again, look, you shouldn't want to get to that point. That shouldn't be the goal of anyone. But the man says what a lot of us are feeling, a lot of us are thinking, and the truth. These guys have acted, in Portland in particular, but a lot of these cities, thinking there's no consequences for their actions because prosecutors won't prosecute them. They're let out days later. We're going to talk about one instance of that here in a second. But they continue to just be entitled. You know, the participation trophy thing continues on. These kids have always been told it's okay to do what they want and no one will challenge them. You're good. You're great. Even though you suck, we're going to give you a trophy. And we've got this awful generation now that just doesn't understand who we ever were. But to his credit and to his point, they're going to if they don't stop. And we don't want that. But a lot of people out there are saying that this country right now is divided. It's black versus white. No, it's not. No, it's not. You can see that clear as day. You can see that with black support increasing to all-time highs with President Trump and for GOP candidates, incumbents or not. You can see that in a lot of areas. People are fed up. You can see that with people who, you know, when they're asked in Baltimore, like in that video we showed a couple weeks ago, do you want to defund the police? Hell no, we don't want to defund the police. That's not what people want. So it's not black versus white. It's patriot versus radical anarchist. It's people who love America versus people who hate America. It's law and order versus chaos and insurrection. And that's what it comes down to. And that's where the lines are going to be drawn. And I think even, hopefully we don't get there, but even if we do, a lot of these people who have capitulated to the mob in the end will come back to the side that says, I love America. I only said this because I'm a pansy and I was scared of getting canceled or losing my job or losing this or losing that or someone saying something mean to me. But in the end, there's only one winning side. It's America. It's people who love this country. By the way, mostly people who are big Second Amendment people, prior military, prior law enforcement, current military, intel. Love their guns, love their country, love their God. I wouldn't want to fight against that either. But this is a perfect example here of who this other side is, and another reason why they'll lose. A, because most people love America and want America to stand, not crumble. But B, because this is the kind of stuff we're dealing with on the other side. This is Matthew Banta, or Commander Red, as he is known in Antifa, a real looker. And he was just arrested. Green Bay police were called because a bunch of white people, of course, at a BLM and Antifa rally, most of them are white, but white people with bats and helmets were headed towards the police. So they were called. And he had, in his case, more than that, he had a flamethrower, fireworks, and smoke grenades, but claimed, after all this went down, that he was not going to incite a riot or violence because, you know, I go to the grocery store with flamethrowers. I don't know what, I mean, that's just what you do, right? Like, so he, ridiculous. And this guy who claims that he was not going to incite violence or be a part of a mob or this, that, and the other with a flamethrower, fireworks, and smoke grenades is the same guy who was arrested just over a month ago, August 1st, for pointing a loaded weapon at a police officer, had 117 rounds of ammunition on him, bit and kicked law enforcement officers. It's not surprising to me that Antifa are biters. I can see that. They seem like a biting community. And he was charged back then with second-degree recklessly endangering use of a dangerous weapon for pointing the loaded weapon at the officer, battery to a law enforcement officer, use of dangerous weapon for biting an officer, battery to law enforcement officer for kicking an officer, resisting an officer, use of dangerous weapon, disorderly conduct, use of dangerous weapon. But back to the current incident. So this is not a good kid, right? I mean, none of these people bring any value to society if they're in these groups. But he's Commander Red, right? He's big dog Commander Red showing up to fight for the rights of people who hate this country and don't actually know what they're fighting for. As soon as police show up, squad car pulls up, you know, because they've seen this group of white people walking down the street with weapons. Squad car pulls up. They disperse. Let me read what they said. A responding officer says he saw four individuals walking towards a protest with baseball bats. One man was wearing a metal helmet with goggles and military-style gear with multiple pouches and was carrying an Antifa flag. When the officer pulled a squad car in front of the group, they ran away. No surprise there. The officer caught Banta, who was carrying the flag, and says Banta dropped into the fetal position and began crying like a little bitch. I added that last part, but that's definitely what he was thinking. He accused the officer of lying on him. The officer replied nobody was on him. Anyways, that is what we're facing. These guys, you see it all over. They in Portland are not pushed back because Ted Wheeler's a douche. Michael Schmidt's a douche. And they're let out, even if they're arrested, they're let right back out to go join the fight again. So there's no consequences for their actions. So they're emboldened and they're in numbers. There's a bunch of other mouth-breathing kids who are just happy to have friends around them for once. And as soon as they get pushback, though, as soon as an alpha shows up, and it doesn't have to be an alpha, as soon as someone who shows up and says, I love this country, I'm not standing for this, they cave, they run. And as soon as the police, who they hate, shows up, they're out. They can't, there's some that don't, I get it, there's some that don't, but for the most part, these guys are a bunch of pansies who talk a big game, and then as soon as you push back, they squirm, or in his case, lie down in the fetal position and cry. So keep pushing for this war. Keep pushing for it. Keep pushing for this division. That's you guys pushing it. We've been waiting. If we were like you, if we were violent like you, this would have been over a long time ago. And you know it. You know, you're playing by those rules in your head. You know that, hey, we can push these guys and be loud because even though we claim that conservatives, Christians, proud Americans, patriots are super violent, awful people. You know deep down that's not true because there's no data. There's no instances that show that. And we've shown ultimate restraint here as a country. But it's not going to last forever. Like this guy said in the video, it's not going to last forever. Eventually, this is going to come to a head. So I like the guy's warning. I don't want us to go there, but I can see it happening. And don't worry, it won't take long. It won't take long. Last thing on Antifa and BLM before we hit the break. This it's frustrating. We've talked about it a lot this week. Sports, the politicization of sports. People in the NFL are going to get to wear stickers on their helmet for whatever cause they want. Obviously, most of them are going to wear stickers for rapists and abusers and people who had warrants for their arrest, this, that, and the other, whether it's Jacob Blake or Floyd or whoever. More of this celebrating awful people thing. But so a lot of that's going to happen. But Tyler Eifert, who's a tight end who used to be with the Bengals, is now with the Jacksonville Jaguars right here in Jacksonville, is a baller. And he's standing up and saying, no. I'm wearing a sticker to support now deceased law enforcement officer David Dorn, who was killed when all the George Floyd riots started up earlier this year. He'll be wearing that on his helmet. And I love it. I love, you know, and it's things like this that have me confused on whether I'm going to watch or not. You know that I'm a diehard Vikings fan. I don't even live in Minnesota anymore, and we still have tickets and go to games. It's a huge problem. Lots of frustrations, though, with where the league is. The league is destroying it. The Vikings have done some stuff, too, that are making it really hard to watch. I know everyone out there, we've talked, we've had conversations on the channel and other places. How do you even support them, watch them? I'm not saying I'm going to. This might be the year that I don't. But things like this happen, and you also want to support the good people who are out there who are standing up, you know, and it does make it kind of tricky. Bottom line, I'm really proud of Tyler Eifert and what he's doing. He's a hell of a tight end, for one, but a hell of a person, moreover. And I love that he's standing up to this. So, at minimum, if you don't watch, that's your call. I'm not telling you what to do. Not that you would listen anyways, but I'm not telling you not to watch. But give support to those who stand up for America, for God, for all of what we are. That's what we need to be doing. We need to be doing more of it, and I really appreciate his courage to do that. Real quick on the show, you know, you can watch it right here on YouTube. Give us a subscribe right down here if you haven't done it. We've been overwhelmed with your support and growth this month. We just hope that it keeps going. So share away. You can go and watch the show as well on DrewBerkowitz.com. It's just the YouTube player at the site, so you choose. But you can go to DrewBerkowitz.com and also get news commentary on a daily basis. Tons of different sources of print content coming in from our staff and partner content. So go check that out. Also, give us a like on Facebook, Twitter, Parler. You can see all those right down here. And again, you can see YouTube in the corner. If you want to subscribe and haven't, it's just that button right down here in the corner. You can get notifications if you click that bell icon right after. On the other side, we're going to talk more about the Dems' rules for thee, but not for me. The double standards that are always alive and well within their party as it pertains this time around to Nancy Pelosi, who's a repeat offender, and New York Governor Andrew Cuomo. Stick around.
Mammoth Nation is the discount club for conservatives. You get great discounts on name brand products and services, and the proceeds help candidates who support the right causes. Plus, the money you save from just one purchase can pay for your entire membership. Liberal Democrats are destroying America, and we can't let Joe Biden be president. It's time to join the fight. Strength in numbers. We give the silent majority a resounding voice. Go to mammothnation.com and let's win this fight together.
Nancy Pelosi back in hot water. Usually she's floating around in a glass of Chardonnay. Whatever. I don't blame her. But she's back in hot water this week because the Democrats have gone, you know, hard to the hoop on COVID-19 fear, pushing masks, pushing all of this, despite lots of data out there that should have you far less concerned than they want you to be. I'll leave that up to you. There's new data that came out. It's up to you. Do some research. Ask around. Don't listen to them. But she's in hot water because they've pushed this. They've pushed this agenda on people because they want the country scared. And some people have legitimate reasons to be scared. People with pre-existing conditions, whatnot. Stay home. do what you've got to do to take care of yourself. But for the most part, we need to move on. But they have pushed these, and then they judge the hell out of people who don't follow their draconian rules. But as always, double standards are alive and well with the Democrats. Pelosi was seen on footage at a hair salon that's not allowed to have people in right now without a mask because she's more important than the rest of us. And certainly the nasty people and scenes that are on the happening in the streets of her district there, which she seems to not care about. She only cares about hating President Trump. But this is what went down. Roll six.
All right, Paul, thanks. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi receiving some criticism tonight for getting her hair done indoors in San Francisco. KPIX 5's Joe Vasquez reports that some salon owners are now upset.
Right now, nobody is allowed to go inside a salon in San Francisco and get their hair done. But it turns out that's exactly what Nancy Pelosi, the House Speaker, did at this salon on Union Street yesterday. The surveillance video shows House Speaker Nancy Pelosi walking inside the E salon with what appears to be a mask pulled down away from her face. That's according to the owner of eSalon, Erica Kios, who told Fox News Pelosi got her hair done here yesterday around 3 o'clock in the afternoon. That appears to be in direct violation of San Francisco's health orders. This afternoon, we tried to talk to Speaker Pelosi, but she got in a car and was driven quickly away. Her office issued this statement, quote, "The speaker always wears a mask and complies with local COVID requirements. This business offered for the speaker to come in on Monday and told her they were allowed by the city to have one customer at a time in the business. The speaker complied with the rules as presented to her by this establishment."
It's infuriating, but it's not surprising. I feel like people need to get their hair done, and they're going to.
Priscilla Kangas is the owner of a different salon, SF Color Collective, nearby.
It shows that we should be allowed to open. I think that that's like the bottom line, is that if she feels comfortable getting her hair done inside of an establishment, then why can't the rest of us?
Nancy Pelosi just flat out broke the rules. She did it with impunity, and now she's blaming the salon. That is disgusting.
Attorney Harmeet Dhillon is a Republican.
That's typical Pelosi. I say to do this, you should do it, but I'm going to do something else. But she wasn't the only one this week who's caught flack for her lack of mask or doing the opposite of what they're telling the people. Andrew Cuomo, you can see here, out walking his dog in New York without a mask. People flipped out about that. And to be clear, I don't care. Like, look, I don't care if they're wearing masks. I don't care that Pelosi went to the salon, that she wasn't wearing a mask. I don't care that Cuomo wasn't wearing a mask. Just stop telling everyone else they have to do it, because it's absurd. If you really believe that everyone needs to do it, then you need to be doing it. If behind the scenes you know that this is more of an initiative and a story to try and coax America into thinking this or that, then that's ridiculous. Do as you say. I don't think any of us need to be nearly as scared as you're trying to tell us that we should be. But if you're going to tell us that, then at least comply. At least comply. So they're under hot water. Again, I'll leave it up to you guys to figure out what you think about this. We've talked about COVID ad nauseum. I'm sick of it. I've had it. It is what it is. I can't smell. Okay. There's worse things. Hopefully it comes back. But, you know, as you get older, you smell more anyway. So it's not a bad thing. But it's not the problem that everyone makes it out to be. And I'm not taking some conspiracy angle and saying a bunch of other stuff about it either. I'm just saying it's just not the problem that they want it to be. It is real. It is something. It is something that certain people need to be concerned about. But you can see it day in, day out with the numbers, and you can see it day in, day out with how even the Democrats, who scare the crap out of people all the time with it, then go and do the exact opposite thing they're telling others to do. And people should see that. They should see that for what it is, and they should see them for who they are. It's not just COVID. It's that. It's the violence we're seeing in the streets and them not condemning it. It's all this other stuff, lying about the mail-in stuff and how they're describing that. It's all reckless. It's all easy to see if people would just pay attention. But again, Democrats talk loud, say it enough times, and people start believing it. And then the truth gets muddled and left down here because the mainstream media won't cover it. And they're just continuing to, you know, pay attention up here, shiny ball, which is full of lies and deceit. Anyways, you should see it. One of the things that the media has been lying about and talking about has been President Trump's mental state. Obviously, lots of concerns about Joe Biden's, as he can't string together a sentence at any given time. We all stumble through where I do it every day on the show. But again, I'm not running for president. And he just gets totally lost and like forgets where he was. Not just his sentence, but he like forgets where he was. Like it's like a full on blackout type moment when he has these incidents. But President Trump has also been under a lot of scrutiny, a lot of people claiming without facts or science that he's not mentally fit to serve as president. I would say the proof's in the pudding. What he's done as president has been pretty damn impressive, especially considering all that is going on. There's some remarkable stuff out there. But we're going to talk about it on the other side with someone who's got a lot more credibility to talk about his mental health and fitness than myself. Dr. Sheldon Roth will drop by to discuss President Trump's state of mind, his health, and also his new book. Actually, it's not new, but it's a book that's very timely. It's recently new, but very timely considering all that's going on. We'll do that on the other side. Stick around. Joe Biden's clearly a mess. I'm not a doctor. We're about to talk to a doctor here in a second. But Joe Biden's a mess. But as he's been under attack in recent months for his mental fitness, President Trump has likewise been under attack by the left since, frankly, before he took office. People challenging his mental state, his mental fitness. Someone who begs to differ, though, is Dr. Sheldon Roth, who defends the president in his new book, Psychologically Sound, The Mind of Donald J. Trump, which offers the first analysis of Trump's mental health that draws on science, not politics. How refreshing. And he joins us now. Doctor, good to see you.
Good to see you, too. Good morning to you and to your listeners.
Well, thank you so much. We're thrilled to have you. And particularly this week, as Trump's health is back in the news, albeit for slightly different reasons. But you've been a psychiatrist for decades.
Yes, many, many decades.
So, you know, I mean, you've got this thing in the bag. All of the people in the media who are commenting on it are very much not psychiatrists or doctors. I'm certainly not. You know, do any of these people have legs to stand on with their claims that the president, which I think is ludicrous, but the president is not mentally fit to serve?
Well, I think the problem here is that I think political views are being masqueraded as medical views. And this is not new in medicine. You know, for example, homosexuality was declared unequivocally as a disease for many years. Treatments were developed for it. And then it became understood as a social issue, as a cultural issue, and the medicalization dropped. The same thing's going on with doctors who approach the mental state of the president. Their political views are being masqueraded as medical views, and actually, in a way, they're easier to discuss than the political views, which, as you can tell from what's going on in the streets, are very, very naughty problems. So, to begin with, I disagree with that. I think the president's quite a healthy personality, and as the title of my book says, psychologically sound. But you have some questions, I'm sure, so go ahead and
well,
ask.
No, yeah, absolutely I do. And I think to your point with the medical versus the political view of all of this and with any issue, you know, what the mainstream media and the left tends to get away with is just say it loud enough and say it enough times and everyone believes it, even if there's no, in this case, science behind it, or if there's no facts behind it with fill in the blank with another discussion or scandal. But is that part of the reason that you wrote this? What spawned the idea of like, I need to write this book and defend the president?
Yeah, well, Actually, I retired from Harvard and private practice about 8-9 years ago. And after the election, I was called by a very prominent a psychiatrist who had in Washington, D.C., who had worked with the CIA for about 20 years, developed many personality profiles of the major dictators. And he wanted to write a book with someone who was pro-Trump, because he violently anti-Trump. He thought it would be healthy for the nation if two disagreeing psychiatrists could have a dialogue. But I'm 3,000 miles away. He's in Washington. A number of things intervened, and it didn't work out. But I was left with several chapters about this man who previously I had known nothing about, and I suddenly felt mobilized as a citizen and as a thoughtful person to share my views on this very important topic, because I felt he was being very meanly treated by many of my colleagues. So I decided not to shove the chapters that I had written into my desk, but to expand it into a book, which actually surprised me, because I've been a clinical psychiatrist my whole life. And suddenly, I'm 82. Suddenly, I was writing a political book, but I felt as a citizen and as a member of the community that I was morally obligated and humanly obligated and felt emotionally driven to have my say with the world. I felt a vote wasn't enough. I had to do a little more like that and put myself on the line, because I can tell you, I have not been treated kindly by many of my colleagues who are aghast that I am pro-Trump. I mean, yeah. even the guy I was writing the book with, he always thought it was tongue-in-cheek that I was pro-Trump, which was obviously not the case.
Right.
Well, I wouldn't change a word of that book, even though it was written about 2 years ago. Everything stands up as of the moment,
Yeah. Well, no, I'm sure you've gotten lots of blowback from it. It's remarkable that so many people out there still don't understand exactly how President Trump became President Trump. They don't understand, you know, just the state of the country and things that led him there. But there's still just all that anger and frustration for anyone who supports them. I get it every day, as you can imagine. But so that's why you wrote the book. How did you come to your conclusions in the book about him being psychologically sound?
Well, there's a tremendous amount of data available to read about Trump. Both, he's written about 18 books. There are endless interviews, endless articles. People have written about him. And what I began to discover is that he's a very full human being. He passes the criteria for mental health, for example, from the World Health Organization, which asks a person to fulfill their potentials in life, to feel they're not being held back primarily, and to make important contributions to the community. But particularly on two central issues of life that's important to everyone, I think he's had a very full life. And those are the issues of how to deal with love and how to deal with loss. And he has spent his entire life in search of love, a personal love. And I think he's found that with Melania. All three of his marriages are singularly different. I describe that in the book. And you can see a person, a recognizable person, like anybody you know, struggling to find satisfaction in his life. In addition to which, he's been extraordinarily productive for the community in New York. Every one of his projects was groundbreaking. He's always been an outsider and always managed to succeed against all sorts of obstacles. But you may have very specific questions, and I want to encourage you to ask me, because I could go on about a number of things.
Well, no, and I'm sure you could, and we want to encourage people to get the book, because we won't be able to cover it in the short time that we have here. But I think those were some of the main ones, because, you know, it's refreshing to see a different narrative out there. You know, we obviously support the president. The viewership here predominantly supports the president. But there's so many that don't. And there's so many that don't when he is, to your point, and I'm sure, you know, it's elaborated on in great depth and detail in the book, has done so much throughout. There is so much data to look at. And certainly there's things that you can pick apart in one way or another. But for the most part, I think to the human eye, the untrained eye, which is me, he seems like he's fit. He seems like he's a good person. He's not a perfect person, but none of us are. What would you say about, and I'm not asking for a specific medical opinion to hold your feet to the fire here, but what would you say about what you've seen from Joe Biden on the other side of the aisle with lots of complaints and concerns about his mental fitness?
Well, you know, in terms of Joe Biden, I have not researched him with the same clarity that I've researched Donald Trump. So I would be very reluctant to pass any kind of judgment on Joe Biden. I think that will all remain to be seen. And actually, if he debates with the president, you won't need any outside psychiatrist to come to an opinion about it. There is one point I would like to bring up about Trump that is completely misunderstood, and that's the issue of misogyny. I mean, most people are totally unaware of the fact, because he makes no big deal about it, that he has an organization of over 20,000 people. Almost half of his executives are women. Women have always had the equal pay to men. And that was from day one, when he started with 3 or 4 or 5 employees. He was the first person in New York City real estate history to hire a construction manager for a major project. Trump Tower was managed by a woman. His father told him he was nuts. All his colleagues ridiculed him. Remember, that was an old boys club back there in the 80s. And without saying I'm pro-women or I'm a feminist, he just went ahead and gave her the job, and she did a magnificent job. She had worked for him in the Hyatt. And if you notice, almost half of the White House staff around him are women. But you don't hear him ballyhooing that about. And he is actually, without saying a word, one of the most pro-women in politics. And yet you hear the misogyny brought up endlessly. And I'm always amazed that he never brings up any of the things I just brought up. And I'm just giving you the tip of the iceberg.
Yeah,
I could go on and on about that. And it's rather extraordinary. There are many features of Donald Trump due to the mainstream media that are hidden from the public. And that's part of my impetus in writing that book.
Yeah. Well, I think it is interesting that, you know, as much as he shoots from the hip and he can be loud and boisterous and he's not conventional in the traditional sense of what we've seen as a commander in chief, I would say it's exactly what the country needed. But also there are, to your points there, there's so many things that he does for people and for communities that aren't celebrated, that he doesn't celebrate, even though he might boast about this, that, or the other. There's certain things that he certainly does. There's a lot of things that he just leaves over there and doesn't really defend himself on, and people pick him apart. And if you do some research and you hear from people who know him, you hear more of that truth and you hear more about his heart and where he's at, which again, I think leads to a lot of the conclusions that you come up with in your book and your analysis of the president. But I do wish that would be discussed more. I do wish that his generosity would be discussed more. And to your credit on the women thing, we talked about it a couple of weeks back. There's mainstream media networks who slam him for being a misogynist, who have a lower percentage of female employees than he does.
Right. And you know, on the issue of race, I'd like them to interview Mike Tyson. He's bailed out Mike Tyson endlessly during his life.
Yeah.
Tyson is devoted to him. Or Michael Jackson, may he rest in peace. I wish he was alive. How many people know the fact that Michael Jackson spent his honeymoon at Mar-a-Lago, completely arranged by Trump, and without saying a word to Jackson, because he knows how shy he was, he had the whole wing closed off so that no one would go near him. There are endless things and relationships he's had with blacks that he never discusses and the mainstream never discusses. I'm really glad at the RNC many blacks came forth to discuss their relationships with Donald Trump. He's a New Yorker. Many New Yorkers don't think about things like race. They live with blacks day in, day out, and are astounded at being called racist. He's of that ilk. He doesn't talk about it. I could go on with many anecdotes, but I'm glad the RNC had those black people. So a number of these things are in my book. You still won't hear it from the mainstream media because a lot of these are Marxist educated journalists, and their hearts and their souls are devoted to a different agenda, and that's what they will follow.
No, they're committed to a different America. They want a different America. They don't appreciate, enjoy, or respect what we have and what gives them the opportunity to go out and do what they do on a daily basis, which is remarkable. What's the best place to get the book? Because I think it's important that people go find it, support what you're doing, and do hear a version of the truth, a different version of the story than the mainstream media is giving them. Where can people find it?
You are a saint for asking that question. It's available on most online booksellers, like the easiest one is Amazon. They have a Kindle, they have an auditory, they have a hardcover. Barnes & Noble carries it. A number of bookstores carry it. And it's wonderful, from my point of view, that you actually ask me about it. And I want to compliment you and thank you for your work, because it's not all that easy. And I am sure calumny is heaped on you daily. I have no doubt about it.
Yes, sir. You are right. It is. It definitely is. But I'm glad that there's people who are willing to stand up and share the truth and speak out. It's a lot of people being shamed into not saying what they feel right now. And we're grateful that you did this analysis for your service in the community as a doctor. And again, thank you for taking the time to be here. We really appreciate it.
Thank you for the time to bring this to people's attention. It's extremely important. Nobody's out of their mind if they vote for Donald Trump. Not in the slightest.
That's right. Well, again, thank you so much for being here, sir. Folks, go Dr. Sheldon Roth's book. Go check it out. Psychologically Sound, The Mind of Donald J. Trump. You'll be glad you did. Again, you can go on Amazon, all the online retailers. I'm a hard book guy. I still like the book. I'm not a Kindle guy, but you do whatever you got to do. Just go get a copy, read it, educate yourself on the opposite of what the mainstream media is saying out there. For the rest of you, thanks so much for joining us. We really appreciate it. Still have one more great show planned for this week. Look forward to bringing it to you. If you haven't done so already here on YouTube, give us a subscription right down here in the corner. Give us a like over on Facebook, Twitter, Parler. You know all the places. We definitely appreciate your support. And remember, we've all got opinions, ideas. It's important we discuss them. And it's okay for you to have different ones. But this is my show. We hope you enjoyed it. We'll see you tomorrow. Welcome to After Hours. We're going to talk a little bit about Rittenhouse. We talked about Facebook earlier today on the show. Their new policy, which basically just gives them more justification to remove whatever they want, whenever they want. But I wanted to talk a little bit about Rittenhouse here because it runs the risk of putting the show in jeopardy because everyone thinks that he's this awful person. And what happened is violent and this, that, and the other. Very divisive topic, right? But he's, you know, there's you're starting to hear from his legal team now. You're starting to hear from his defense describing, walking through the events of that night, which again, I still would say, and I know you're going to disagree with me, some of you, and that's fine. Just don't go down there. Just don't go down there. Then you don't have to deal with this. Let them dig their own grave. Even President Trump said this week. Even President Trump said, don't confront these people. Just let them do their thing. It's only helping us, and it's going to help this end. Or it's not going to, and then we're going to go to where a lot of you think we're going to go anyways, and maybe that's the case. But regardless of that, everyone can think what they want to think about whether he should be there or not. But he's going through a lot right now, obviously charged with murder. And what we've seen with all of these, and it's not just Rittenhouse, this has happened before with other stuff, but what we've seen in terms of fundraising, you know, you've got all these platforms now, GoFundMe, of course, being one of the biggest. But you've got all these platforms where people go, you know, a family loses a loved one, they help with costs. You know, this happens, they help with legal costs. They do it for the Jacob Blakes and the George Floyds of the world to help with legal costs. But there's always pushback from these platforms when they defend the Patriots, in this case, Kyle Rittenhouse, and try and get him some support for what he's about to go through. Whether he deserved it or not, they have the right to support him if they want. That's their choice. But these platforms say that it breaks rules. It breaks rules, and they will not allow it. So they instantly take away these pages trying to raise funds for, in this case, Kyle Rittenhouse. So GoFundMe and some of those ones are off the table. Meanwhile, they're allowed to have them for violent criminals, other people that align more with their ideology. That's fine. That's totally fine. Break the rules, break the law, murder, rape, assault, whatever. No worries. We'll help you raise funds. We'll allow your people to raise funds here so we can just keep perpetuating these problems, which we've gotten really good at a country of doing. But there's a Christian crowdfunding platform, Give, Send, Go, that's raised nearly $334,000 as of earlier this week. It's probably more now. But they'd raised a huge amount for Kyle Rittenhouse to go out and help defend him, cover some of these costs that are going to stack up. I mean, this is going to be a few scenarios. There's probably more, but we'll go through three. He's going to get what they're charging him with, which is life plus 170 years. Never see the open world again. There'll be a reduction, and he'll still go away, which will still, you know, there's expenses with all that anyways. But then there's also the, maybe he does get off. But all of them involve money, and lots of it. Like, this is going to be an awful season of life for him, no matter how it ends. But still, there's people trying to help and support that. So, you know, he can't go to GoFundMe. He can't go to these other places. So you go to Give, Send, Go, and they raise $334,000. But you've also got to spread the message with these things, right? You've got to have some virality to these campaigns to pull on people's heartstrings, make them aware, and have them donate, whether they're small or large amounts. But the problem is Facebook, who we, again, talked about earlier in the show, has banned the link for Give, Send, Go from being shared. If any user attempts to share the link, an error pops up telling them that it violates Facebook's community standards, but does not offer any explanation. So not surprising, right? People don't want videos and commentary on Rittenhouse because it was a violent event that people, like all other forms of history, just want to erase, unless it aligns exactly with their ideology and paints him as a white supremacist. But the problem is they ban that. They ban that there. And then Facebook, you can't even share this link because it's against community standards. But they allow links like GoFundMe to fundraisers for others who have been accused of crimes. Take Mark Wilson, for example, who was charged with felony murder after killing a 17-year-old girl. He's behind bars. GoFundMe says he's A-okay. Facebook, no problem. You've got Michael Moore, who started one for tearing down monuments. No problem. It's against the law, but what, I mean, whatever. No problem. Kenneth Walker, the boyfriend of deceased Breonna Taylor, who was initially charged with attempted murder of a police officer. Charges were later dropped. But very contentious issue. That's fine, because it's on the BLM side of things. It's on the anti-police side of things. Regardless of where you fall on that whole incident, no one wanted Breonna Taylor dead. No one wants any of these violent encounters to happen. But it is a violent world out there. There's things that happen. Still, that side is totally fine. Of course, the Minnesota Freedom Fund, you've heard a lot about in the news this week, which was promoted on Twitter by Kamala Harris. They bail out people, rioters. Literally, the vice president nominee on the Biden-Harris ticket could be the next vice president, likely the next president if they win, because Biden certainly can't do it, has pushed this initiative to help bail out people who are charged with murder, violent felonies, sex crimes. It's mostly for rioters, but this fund also bails out those people, so you're complicit by being involved with it. There's other ones for Portland protesters and arrests and all them. All of it to say that the double standard is so blaringly obvious. It's so ridiculous, and it shows that these people behind Facebook, GoFundMe, a lot of these big tech platforms, so whether they're social media or fundraising, what have you, are no different than the anarchists in the street, than the violent rioters, looters, in some cases murderers, that are out there in the street, because they fully, wholeheartedly endorse them by not condemning their behavior and allowing people to support them, allowing the lies that the mainstream media is sharing out there to spread virally while squelching the truth that's being promoted by people with different opinions. They allow these fundraisers to go on and protect them, give them support for their family, and essentially give them bail money to get out so they can go do the same damn thing again. And it's total BS, and most people see it. They, of course, claim they're not doing it. It's community standards. We're just following the rules. But again, you're blocking people on this side and not the other side. I don't care if it was the other way around. It's still not, it's not, you know, I don't want to sound like a child here, but that's not fair. That's not how this system was built. You break a law, you broke a law. You face the consequences. If people, if you're going to start GoFundMe and you're going to claim that you're open to all things, your Facebook, you're going to claim that you're open to all ideals and politics, then do it. If you're not, again, at least Jack Dorsey and Twitter have said, look, we're libs. Like, they're open about it, or they're more open about it. But these platforms, the double standards and the hypocrisy is not only ridiculous, but it's dangerous and it's reckless in these cases, because the people that it's benefiting are violent criminals. I'm sure there's some tucked in there who were wrongly charged. There was something in the case that should get it thrown out, whatever. I'm sure that's true. But it's just blatantly obvious in some of these cases that they're choosing to support anarchy, violence, insurrection, and they refuse to support people who go against that and claim that it's bad. So I tell you, I'll say it again. I don't think he should have gone down there, but the people that were killed by Rittenhouse were all violent offenders, people with bad rap sheets, awful people who, just by being down there, proved that they were useless dregs in society. But then you see who they were behind that. You see that the one was about to shoot him, execution style, before he got shot in the arm. So I'm not all for him having gone down there, but I'm all for how he defended himself. And I'm all for stopping what these other anarchists and mouth-breathing kids are doing out there. So my thoughts and prayers go to him and his family as they figure out their way through this, regardless of the outcome. And my thought is that he should be entitled to raising funds. Others should be able to raise funds for him if that's the side they take. If people take the other side, fine. I don't give a crap. Whatever. Like, but there's got to be balance. There's got to be more balance. And we can't be suppressed on our side, and it's always our side that's being suppressed, if you haven't noticed. It's always us. We'll keep you posted on this, what's going on with it, but I wanted to share that. Pay attention, folks. Facebook, it's only going to get worse. They're only going to push back more, certainly during this election season, and then God forbid they win. God forbid they win. They say that we squelch their voice, we're authoritarian, dictators, fascist, Nazis, whatever. All the things that they are, when you look at the definition of all those terms, it's literally what they are and not what we are. Because if that was true, they wouldn't have the ability to do any of the stuff they're doing. And yet they do, because it's the freest, greatest country on the planet for now. So we got to push back. We got to be aware of what's going on out there. One more great show to come this week. One more After Hours to come this week. And hopefully some other content as Biden visits Kenosha and some other stuff that'll certainly provide some funny and interesting stuff. So have a great night. We appreciate you sticking with us.